Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh on this day of Yom Tovach for Atzeret, and we're here therefore still on Shavuos for the next 6 days, and therefore we're very happy to be Oseik in Kabbalat HaTorah, and our Mishnah brings us directly to Har Sinai. So, the Halakha of Mishnah begins on Daf Peivav. So one of the most fascinating things that we learn from Kabbalah Satorah is the fact that for some reason, the Torah is very marked on not having viable sperm around on Har Sinai, for whatever the reason is. But the point is, in order to avoid that, Klal Yisrael was told not to engage with women till whatever this is. The Shloshet Yamim, we're going to analyze all of this in the Gemara. Now, what would be the reason to stay away from a woman for 3 days, for heaven's sakes? What would that have to do with the man? It wouldn't have anything to do with a man, but it would have to do with sperm. Because assuming that there was any viable sperm that would be able to still be nifletet, it could leak out from this woman, if it were still viable, it would be metama her. And therefore, she would not be suitable for Kabbalah Satorah, since the Torah tells us that all you need to worry about is the third day, up to the third day. So then apparently, beyond that, the sperm is no longer viable. And it's from there that we learn out what's actually true, that sperm only lives for 72 hours, and therefore it's going to be in the end, shalosh, 3 days, this is the way we're going to paskin. However, this Mishnah is telling us that any time on the third day, it would be okay. And after the third day, it would be okay. But b'yom ha'shlishi, it would be tmeya. So since the Torah says, ha'yunichonim l'shloshet yamim, so then that would mean that beyond that, there would be no problem. We're going to talk about the details of what day this was and so on in the Gemara. Minayin shemarchitzin et ha'milah, b'yom ha'shlishi shechal liot b'shabbat. How do we know that it is mutter to take a normal child that isn't showing any signs of distress, and on the third day after the milah, which you would say is plenty of time to recover, it's not yet time to recover. And even on the third day after the milah, you still are mechalel Shabbos in order to wash off the womb. We know that from Shechem, because it says over there, Vayi b'yom ha'shlishi b'heyotam ko'avim, which people mistakenly think means, and so it was on the third day when they were in tremendous pain. That's not what it means. It means on the third day of their pain, when they were still in pain, so now they've really, for the past 3 days, they've really been resting. The more they rest, the weaker they get, and therefore, it's a good time to attack them. It's not that they're more in pain. They're more in pain, obviously, the first day and the second day than they are on the third day. But even on the third day, there's still biyotam koavim. We, by the way, do not do this because nobody knows why, but it's another one of those things that we do not go according to what the Gemara says in things that have to do with medicine. So, you know, the excuse that's given all the time is things have changed. Nishtanu ha'teva. But basically, we do not find it to be a normal good idea to go around washing the wound of Mila. And unless there's some kind of sign of infection or something like that, then obviously Mechalel Shabbos, but not as part of normal behavior. So that's the next thing we learn out of Pasuk. Now the third thing. How do you know that you tie this red thread on the horns of the Sarah Mishtaleach before it's sent out, and that becomes a remez to the mechila of the chatoim, shenemar im yu chatoichem kashanim, kasheleg yalbinu. So this comes, tell me, your chatoim will be like crimson, so they're bright red, they'll become white as snow. Okay, so you have to give it some crimson. And the fourth thing that we have a remez in the pasuk, minay l'sichashi kishkiyabi amakipurim, how do you know that rubbing oil is considered to be osur on Yom Kippur the same way that drinking would be? Sheneemar v'tavocha mayim bikirbo u'chashemen ba'atzmotav. So here the Torah is comparing Mayim, that is going inside of you, and Shemen, that's being applied on the outside, Ke'atzmotav. Okay, this, by the way, is a reference to Chet, and therefore it's also talking about Klalav, Yubash Klala, it says over there, Kemado, referring to Rishayim. So on Yom HaKippurim, it's considered to be a beautiful remez for the Inyan of Inui HaNefesh. Okay, now let's get into the nitty-gritty over here. The Reisha of the Mishnah is clearly not going according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds that on the third day, sperm is no longer viable. And the Mishnah is saying that she would be Tmei'ah. And we're going to see later on where Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that. So, but we also know that the Seifa, which talks about the third day of Milah, is Dafka Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. He's the one who says that later on in Perek Rabbi Elazar de Milah. So therefore, what we have over here is a contradiction in our Mishnah. Are we going like Rabbi Elazar or are we not? Now, in general, there are two very different approaches to what we do when we find this type of contradiction in a Mishnah, where some of it seems to be going to A and some of it seems to be going to X. So one approach is that we bite the bullet and we say, look, the Mishnah obviously is a conglomeration of different Tanoim and we put them together. The other approach is to say that the Mishnah is referring to different cases and that there's not really a contradiction, or to actually change the gears in the Mishnah. This is a big machlokas with Rabbi Yochanan in the Mishnah of Chavis and Bav Metzia, famous story where Rabbi Yochanan said, anybody who can explain to me a way to read the Mishnah here according to one Tana, I will personally become his bath helper. I'll carry his clothes and his shoes to the bathhouse. I will be his balan. Okay, so he was pretty desperate to get that. And he was not about, there was a simple explanation there by changing the case in the Mishnah and saying that the case is talking about that you put the barrel down, it's talking about a shomer, you put the barrel down in a place that was not where it had been meant to be kept. Rabbi Yochanan refused to do that because he did not want to play games with a Mishnah, even though it was open to that. He would rather accept that it was said by two Tanoim, even though it drove him really crazy. He was ready to do anything not to have to do that. There's the other man, the Omer, who's ready to go and to change the Mishnah. So the same thing would be true over here. Mandalo muki ketanoi, whoever does not, he's ready to change a Mishnah, even if necessary, or change the case of the Mishnah, in order not to have the Mishnah going like two separate Tanoim, he changes the Reisha to read Torah. Tosfos says it was another gears of the Mishnah that indeed said Torah. It's not arbitrarily you change it. Umuki lo lekulik Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. According to him, therefore, the whole Mishnah would work out perfectly because the third day she would already be Torah. Whereas Mandamukim Ketanoi, whoever's ready to accept, bite the bullet, that there's two different Mandi Amrim, instead of changing the Mishnah anyway, he would say the Reisha indeed is the Rabbanu argue in Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and the Seifa is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Now, it turns out that we actually have four different shitas about the longevity of sperm. And the first three shittas, which we're going to bring over here, are the ones that are nogea in the opening of the sukkah. And this would be the machlokes. Tana Rabbana, poleta shechva zera, b'yom ha-shelishi tohora, divrei Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So, by the way, when we're talking about over here, the Gemara will clarify later, we're not talking about the longevity of sperm in air. We're talking about the longevity of sperm within a human body. So they're inside of a womb, or they're inside of a vagina. So they're being kept warm. And that gives us a 72-hour period for viable sperm. What do we care if sperm is viable? Because since the Torah says shechvat zera every time, zera, we understand in that context, means ru'uya lahazriya. It has to be viable to create a pregnancy. And therefore, the moment that we say that it's no longer viable, we don't have a problem of the tuma of shechvat zera. So what we're talking about over here, therefore, is an analysis of how much time took place between the warning of Moshe Rabbeinu to Klal Yisrael not to engage in intercourse and the actual tefillah at Har Sinai. And that would define what the Torah was careful about. So here's the machlokas. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, as we just said, he holds on the third day, then it would still be Tahora. Rabbi Yishmael says, now, sometimes it may be 4 12-hour periods, sometimes it may be 5 12-hour periods, sometimes it may be 6 12-hour periods. But the point is that the Torah only spoke about days, Yom HaShlishi. Now, when you talk about days, we run into the problem of the first of those days is not a full day. So the question over here is, how do we allow for the Miktzata Yom Kikulo? In other words, let's say that the mitzvah was given at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, right? And then we're talking about Yom HaShlishi. Okay, so then the question would be, when did this person who hears of this tzivui, when was the last time he engaged in intercourse? Now, let's say that he heard about this at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, so then maybe 3 o'clock on that day, his wife had already absorbed some of this semen. And then we have to analyze how much time was there to Kabbalah Satera, which took place on Shabbos. So what we would have over there is the remainder of that day. So let's say, and we're going to see that there's a machlokas on what day we're talking about. Are we talking about on a Wednesday, or are we talking about on a Thursday? This turns out to be part of the machlokas. So it would depend when it was that we started counting. So therefore, what we have over here is, let us assume that the tzivui was given on a Wednesday. Now, that could mean the entire Wednesday. It could mean only the last few minutes of Wednesday. So then what we would only have in terms of full onot, as opposed to days, would be the evening of Thursday, the evening of Friday and Friday. Those are 4 full onot. And then on Friday night, they went to the mikveh. So because of this, Rabbi Shmuel says, look, it depends. If she was poletet on the third day, she's definitely tameah. But on the fourth day, she would be tahor. I agree with the idea that it is not a function of onot. It's a function of days. Therefore, mixes ayom kikulo. So let us say that she had last had intercourse on Yom Revi'i, right in the evening. So then until Shabbos, meaning the Friday night at the beginning of Shabbos, any type of plitat shechvazera would be tame, but it could be that it would be 5 full onot. It could be if it would be 6. I mean, I don't know. Let's say that she had only had intercourse benash mashot on Tuesday night, the night of Wednesday. So then it would be 6 onot, but we don't really care because the Torah is not talking about onot. The Torah is talking about days, and therefore it's irrelevant precisely how many onot there are. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, no, it is actually a function of 60 hours. It has to be 5 onot. And if, in fact, let's say that she had intercourse in the morning of that Wednesday, so then we'll have to give her a little bit of extra time to make up for those missing hours. So this is a completely different approach. So according to Rabbi Akiva, it is not a function of what day it's on. It's a function of how many hours have passed. We'll see that the Rabbanan argue with all of these three shitot, and they hold it's 72 hours. So it would be 6 full onot, which is actually scientifically the longevity of sperm. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva says a completely new approach. Now, what are they arguing about precisely over here? So they said this over, and they didn't understand it, because they asked, as they said it, that, look, we understand what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds like the Rabbanan later on, who says that Moshe Rabbeinu warned them about staying away from women on Thursday. Rabbi Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yossi, and he says Moshe Rabbeinu warned them about staying away from women on Wednesday. And we're going to see what this is all revolving around in the story of Kabbalah Satera, how to read the different Yeridais and Ashkamas of Moshe Rabbeinu, and how to understand Bo Midbar Sinai about Rosh Chodesh. But that is detail. We'll get into those details tomorrow. We'll just talk about them in general today. And therefore, it works out very well. So according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, if he holds to the of the Rabbanan, then he's basically going to tell you that already on the third day, I don't care how many onot there were, but because it makes the Yom Kikulo and it's a function of a day, on the third day she would be tar. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, who holds, well, actually on Wednesday, they already did Prisha, and it might even be six full onot if they didn't sleep together on Wednesday, or it might only be four in case they slept together right before the end of the day on Wednesday. I don't know, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu told them at the end of the day, maybe it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So it wouldn't matter, because it would be at least those four onot. But according to Rabbi Akiva, I mean, what does Rabbi Akiva hold? No matter who he holds like, how would he get the idea that it has to be precisely those amount of hours, because the Torah only spoke about the days? Answers the Gemara, the truth is Rabbi Akiva agrees, like Rabbi Yossi, namely that Wednesday, Moshe Rabbeinu told them, Al Tikshu Elisha. But Rabbi Akiva says it's a given that if Moshe Rabbeinu said that on Wednesday, that it would have had to have been early in the morning on Wednesday before the day began. Why is that? Because the Torah goes out of its way to tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu always went down to give messages to Klal Yisrael first thing in the morning. Now, why would that be important to us to know, says Rabbi Akiva? Mayor Simcha, you're falling asleep. Why would that be important for us to know? It's important because it tells us that the mitzvah of Prisha was at the very beginning of the day. And therefore, there really only would have been a precise number of onot. So from there, you can see that the Torah is makbid on the actual time that was available. And where do we see that from? So really, it's like Rabbi Yossi, except he adjusts it by taking into consideration Rav Ada Bar Ava. K'dayomer Rav Ada Bar Ava, Moshe always went up to Har Sinai in the morning when he was going to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He always came down early in the morning when he had a message to give to Klal Yisrael. We know that he always went up in the morning. That's a Beferish Pasuk. Vayashke Moshe baboker vayalan Har Sinai. But we also know that he came down early in the morning to speak to Yisrael. How do we know that? Dechtiv lech reid the alita atava aronimcha. Now, it's strange that the Torah puts together the Yerida and the Aliyah in that fashion. Lech reid ve alita. I mean, is the Yerida specifically in this fashion a halachic concept? It is indeed. Makish Yerida la Aliyah. Just like we know that the Aliyah was Bahashkama, the Yerida, to speak to Klal Yisrael, had to be the first thing in the morning. But wait a minute. Why in the world would Moshe Rabbeinu have to tell people not to engage in intercourse in the morning of Wednesday, where since it's already morning, no decent member of Klal Yisrael would chas v'sholom engage in intercourse in the middle of the day? That would not be tzanua anyway. And since Rav Huna says, Yisrael kedoshimein ve'ein mishamshin mitotehem bayom, Yisrael being on such a darga of kedusha, want very much to respect their wives, and since this is called bozer drachav yamut, what if he sees something about his wife that he doesn't like while engaging in such intimacy? So because of that, Klal Yisrael would never actually have light at such a time. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is really insulting them by saying to them, I needed to come down to warn you about this in the early morning. They would look at me, who would do such a thing anyway? You could have told us 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it would be plenty of time for us to know. Answers the Gemara, because it's not so. Because Amar Rava, imaya bayit afel mutar. First of all, if you're in a dark room, that's exactly the same as the nighttime. There's no mitzvah, particularly nighttime. The idea is to respect your wife. The Amar Rava, it's actually the ahavta l'reacha kamocha, the respect. We darshan it from also there. The Amar Rava v'itamer of Papa. Even worse is that Rava says if the husband is a Talmud Chacham and he is careful, he can simply be ma'afil betalito mutar. He can simply cover the proceedings with his covers, and then there would be no chashash. So according to this, Moshe Rabbeinu would have to actually warn them not to do such a thing because it would certainly be mutar under the correct circumstances. Anyway, so according to this, Rabbi Akiva says, since the Torah had to tell us precisely the moment that Moshe Rabbeinu gave over the mitzvah of Prisha, therefore it must be that the Torah is makbid on these 60 hours. Asks the Gemara, but wait a second. There won't be time if they go to the mikveh on Friday night. There will not be time for Harif Shemesh, because the Torah is being given the next morning on Shabbos morning, and then that would mean that they're really still Tumeim, right? So, Hatfula Yomninu. This doesn't make sense. Maybe, actually, they had to go to the mikveh before the evening, and then you're missing one of those onot, Rabbi Akiva, because the Torah is going to allow them to go to the mikveh during the day, not the night of Friday night. So, maybe this opening is a mistake, says the Gemara. No. It's not a mistake, that because Abaye Bar Ravin and Rav Hanina Bar Ravin, both of them said, actually, nitna Torah l'tful yom. The din of tful yom is a specific halacha vis-a-vis achilas kochim, and so on. It is not nogea Kabbalat HaTorah. Kabbalat HaTorah was the prisha from sperm directly, and not the din of another tuma, which would have been the din of tful yom. So there was no hakpada. Maremar was there, and he was saying over this, and Ravina asked Maremar, wait a minute, are you saying that that is really what happened? In other words, that the Torah was given to Tful Yom, or was HaKadosh Baruch Hu on their side to make sure that their everybody was actually Tahar? Meaning that what happened was that, in fact, people did go to the mikveh. They didn't want to be Tful Yom, except that they were careful to make certain that if there were any discharge after the Harif Shemesh of the day before, of Thursday, so then they would go to the mikveh again, and then they would have to go to Kabbalah Sotera without having Harif Shemesh. But it doesn't mean that everybody waited until Friday night, and then they actually were Tfula Yom. So which one do you mean? Omarle, no, I meant, obviously, they went to the mikveh before. I just mean that in the event that there would have been a plitat shechvat zera after the evening, then it wouldn't have been a problem. They would have gone to the mikveh again. They obviously preferred not to. And in fact, it turned out that nobody had to. So all I was saying was that the Torah could have been given to Tfulei Yom. You'll note the interesting connection over here to the whole issue of the Parah Aduma, where we have exactly this issue, that it's mutter with Tful Yom, and they had to actually create situations with the Tful Yom in order to force the Tzedukim out of their position. But the idea of the Parah Aduma, of course, is that it's coming as a kapora for the Kilkul of Har Sinai. So the two sugyas are actually interrelated. But in any event, I wasn't saying they actually used the Tful Yom. I was saying that it was ro'i to be given as a Tful Yom. Now, why is all of this necessary? Couldn't they have gone to the mikveh on Friday night and let them be mekabel Torah during the night? And what is the idea over here? So Rabbi Akiva is saying that it's the precise amount of onot, right? And I don't understand. If all that had to be done is HaKadosh Baruch Hu waited until the morning to give Torah, and if you're right, why did he wait until the morning? I mean, maybe the fact is that there was the chashash in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mind that there would be a plita during the night, and that therefore you would have to wait all the way until the next morning. So you're telling me that all you need is 5 onot, Rabbi Akiva claims. Maybe that's not true. Maybe you need 6 onot. And where's the 6th onot come from? Torah was only given in the morning. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu waited till the morning, just in case. Because otherwise, wouldn't the Torah be given in the middle of the night? Rav Yitzchak, the Torah would not be given in the middle of the night. After all, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's absolutely clear that I'm speaking to all of you guys, right? Yeshayahu says, Kirvu Eli, Shimu Zot, Lo Mirosh B'Seter Di Barti Me'ete Yotasham. I didn't speak in the dark. I didn't speak when nobody knew about it. Everything was open. Everything was public. Everything could be heard. There's nothing to argue about. Okay, so then that's good for the point. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want the Torah to be given at night. Okay, so even so, if the Torah was given in the morning, so then couldn't they go to the mikveh in the morning? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to come down early in the morning to make sure that you've got these onot shleimot? I mean, even if you don't have onot shleimot, so okay, so they would go to the mikveh, they would get an additional onah, just in the event that they had slept with their wives that afternoon, and they would be able to take the additional onah on Friday night and go to the mikveh in the morning. And then they would still have the chamesh onot shleimot, right? So since the Torah anyway was given in the daytime, what would be the big deal? Answers the Gemara, theoretically, you're right. Logistically, it's just a disaster. You know what that would be like? That would be like when you go to shul early on Shabbos morning, half the people are walking around with towels. They're on their way to the mikveh. Half of the people are going to davening. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. Could you just imagine if Kabbalah Satira would have looked like a Hasidic neighborhood? So because of that, they didn't want a situation like that, that people should go to the mikveh in the morning. And because of that, so the only thing that we needed to do was send Moshe Rabbeinu down early enough to make sure that we have the Chomesh Onos Shleimos. Om Reb Chiya Bar Rabba, Om Reb Yochanan, all of this is very nice. If you're looking only at the Shitas of Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, and so on, but the Chachomim say, you need Sheish Onot Shleimot, 72 hours. Furthermore, Amrav Chista, the whole Machloket over here is Shepir Shamin HaYisha. This is only where you have semen that is leaking that was in a woman's body. But suppose you have Pirsha Min HaIsh. Suppose you have semen on a cloth or something. Over there, Tmei'a Kol Zman Shehilacha. Over there, it has nothing to do with the amount of time. As long as things were kept at a reasonable temperature, so then as long as there's no dehydration, the semen, the sperm is still viable. Motziv Rav Sheshes. V'chol Beget, V'chol Or, Asher Yeh Alav Shechvat Zera, Prat l'shechvat zera sheyi srucha. Now, if the Torah goes out of its way to tell us that any kind of thing that has shechvat zera on it has to be put into the mikveh, and it's going to be tamei until that is until there's Harav Shemesh. Now, this is coming to tell me that it has to be shechvat zera, because afterwards it says, Isha asher yishkav ish ota shechvat zera v'rochatzu b'mayim v'tam'u ad ha'erev. So then what we're talking about over here, this, in the second pasuk, was definitely talking about viable sperm. So the same thing is true over here. It's talking about viable sperm. So that means that it has to be able to be viable in order to be metame. And I'm assuming that this is also referring to a case. How did it get on this beged or? It just came from a man directly. And you see from there that if you have semen that is on a beged, you have to worry about its viability. Because otherwise, why is it stressing that it needs to be viable in order for it to be b'chuyev to be put into a mikveh to be tar? So you said it just, it's always going to be fine. A week later, it's still fine. As long as the conditions are good conditions and there's still no dehydration. It says beferish not like this in this process because it's comparing it over here to viable sperm that are being used for actual impregnation from the next process. So how do you say that it's not true? Answers the Gemara. Who says? Where does it say over here that we're talking about semen that actually was ejaculated onto this beged? Maybe it's talking about Shapir Shah Min Aisha. It might be talking about exactly what we've been talking about all along. So we're talking about leakage. And over there, in fact, it's very makbid on the viability issue because of the heat. Boy Rav Papa, the question is how specific is the conditions that we're talking about? Now, suppose we have Jewish sperm in a non-Jewish woman's womb. What would be the din over there? Because all that we see over here in terms of Kabbalah Satera is the temperature of a Jewish woman. Now, sperm may be very sensitive to temperature. Maybe even a half a degree difference would give us a different amount of time. Do we assume that non-Jews have the same level of body heat as Jews? Because as you know, Jews are always guilty. Guilt generates heat and worry. And Jews, being very worried all the time, should definitely have a higher body temperature. And because of that, maybe this is only, this is serious. Absolutely amazing, Gemara. So because of this, if the conditions are not just right, you know, for the destruction of this sperm's viability, so maybe it would be different. So Yisrael did the Igib and mitzvahs. These Jews are always worried about doing a mitzvah right, and maybe they did something wrong, and so they never really get a chance to relax. So their metabolism is very high. So a high metabolism generates additional body heat. So maybe, Avdei Kochavim, they got a relaxed, happy life. Everything is fine. Everything is cool. Exactly. So if it's cool, it might actually be slightly different internal heat, and therefore it won't destroy their sperm. We're only talking about Jewish sperm, however, over here, because Goyish sperm is not metamic. Even though we gave a din of Zovim and so on, but remember, we learned Beferish that Shechva Zaro is not metame, so we have to have this unpleasant case of Jewish sperm in a non-Jewish body in order to be able to ask the question. Otherwise, of course, we wouldn't have ever brought up such a thing. Or maybe, because of the fact that Jews keep kashrus, maybe kosher food actually keeps their metabolism better balanced than these goyim. Because these goyim who are eating all types of crabs and crawly wall, snails and God knows what else they're eating that are full of coronaviruses and so on. So maybe because of that, their body gets hotter because of the poor metabolism control. And maybe they're just as bad off as the guilty Jews. And therefore, chavil gofayim. Maybe their body temperature is also bad news. And let's say you're going to tell me that given the achlishkatzim v'ramashim chavagufayim, you're ready to say that a goyish, a woman, has the same body temperature. How about Jewish sperm in an animal? Also not a pleasant case, but what would be the din? Would it also decay at the same temperature or not? So isha de isla prozdor mesarachat, avabehemet aletle prozdor lo. Is it possible that because of the way a human is built with a long vaginal canal, so that keeps the temperature hot inside the uterus. A behema, however, is exposed to the outside. Maybe it cools it off. Odumaloshna, all of these questions are teku. We don't have enough information. Okay, so now getting back to the machlokas between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi about how long it was that there was the days between the mitzvah of Prisha and the actual Kabbalah HaTorah. Now, that is nogea, basically, when the actual Kabbalah HaTorah was, because it depends on how we understand the length of time from coming to our Sinai to the actual giving of the Torah. And let us begin with the basic question. What day was Kabbalah HaTorah? So, Tana Rabbanan, Bishishi Bachodesh Nitnu Aseret HaDibrot LeYisrael. Torah was given on the sixth day of Sivan. Rabbi Yossi Omer, no, it was given on the seventh day of Sivan. So Amar Rava, Tekule Alma, look, what are we arguing about over here? There's no question, the Pasuk says Beferish, that it was Rosh Chodesh when Klal Yisrael came to Midbar Sinai. How do I know that? Because it says Bayom Hazeh Bo Midbar Sinai. What is it stressing? Bayom Hazeh Bachodesh Hashelishi Latzeit Bnei Yisrael Mi Eretz Mitzrayim. Bayom Hazeh. So we're making this beautiful proclamation that we read on Shavuos. Bo Midbar Sinai. Okay, so the Bo Midbar Sinai uses the same word as Hachodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim. And when we talk about the day, the Yom HaZeh, it's a reference to Rosh Chodesh. So that's for sure. But nobody argues about that. So Ma Lahalan Rosh Chodesh, Afkan Rosh Chodesh. Furthermore, also everybody agrees that Kabbalah HaTorah was given on a Yom HaShabbat. And that is because it says, Kulei Alma B'Shabbat Nitna Torah LeYisrael, because K'tivacha Zachor et Yom HaShabbat LeKadsho. And when Moshe Rabbeinu uses that word zachor in terms of Yetzias Mitzrayim, it was a reference to the live consciousness of what is currently happening. Because when he says, Zochorata Yom HaZeh Asher Yatzatem Mitzrayim, that is a reference to today, right? Yom HaZeh Asher Yatzatem Mitzrayim. Remember, of course, that the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is built around the comparison to Zochoras Yom HaShavas, which this Gemara is talking about in a completely different context, and is the entire marker that the Rambam brings of the mitzvah. So in any event, that's not an issue. Zochor means the day that you're talking about. So malalam beitzumo shel yom, afkan beitzumo shel yom. That's not even an issue. Ki plige bekvia diyarcha. The question, therefore, revolves around the sole remaining issue. The sole remaining issue was, what was that day of Rosh Chodesh? So there we have a machlokas. Rabbi Yossi holds that Rosh Chodesh in that year came out on a Sunday. So that means that they arrived in Midbar Sinai, at Har Sinai, on Sunday. Moshe Rabbeinu, as opposed to some of these yeshivas and so on, would not expect people to come to Seder on the same day that they arrived. I mean, after all, people cannot concentrate. So Moshe Rabbeinu did not say a word to them on Sunday, because Mishum Chul Shedorcha, people are like really tired from travel. They're trying to get settled. And it's not normal to talk to people under those kind of conditions if you want them to be able to respond. So nothing was said on Sunday. Then Betrei B'Shabbos, the next thing that we find is the Maimer of HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying to Moshe, you should tell them, Atem Tiyuli Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh Elo HaDvarim Asher Tomar L'Vnei Yisrael. Fine, Tidaber L'Vnei Yisrael. Okay, so this is talking about, therefore, on Tulata. Now, this would now be on the Tuesday. And then on Monday. And then B'Tulata Amarlo Mitzvat Hagbalah. So this was told to them on Tuesday. So the things that Moshe Rabbeinu was spoken to on the Monday, he came down and told Klal Yisrael the next day, and that was that message, that beautiful message of Atem Tiyuli Mamlechet Kohanim. And then that went together with Vayikra L'Zikney Ha'am, and so on and so forth. So he tells them this, goes up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tells HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well, they said that they want to be Zohar, to see you directly. So then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, all right, so then tell them to do the mitzvah of Prisha. So then it was Wednesday that they did Prisha. The Rabbonin hold that actually Rosh Chodesh was on Monday. And therefore, on Monday, they weren't told anything. Again, for the same reason, Mishum Chul Shedorcha. On Tuesday was the time that they were spoken to about Atem Tiyuli Mamlechas Kohanim. The din of Hagbalah came, therefore, on Wednesday, and Thursday was the day of Prisha. So, Chamishi, Ovid Prisha.